We go, Pankaj. If you could just comment on the meeting of Modi with Trump today at the White House, and then we'll do an extended conversation.
Well, you know, I think we've seen very recently, just in the last few days, you know, a kind of endless parade of heads of state. Jordan, you just mentioned, the Japanese prime minister was just there. People really trying to appease a bully, the chief bully, and hoping that they will get something out of him that they can go back and share with their people. I think Modi is in a particularly difficult situation. I don't know if your viewers know.
We have 15 seconds.
There were images all across India of Indian migrants being deported from the United States, shackled and chained. It created a lot of shock, and Modi has to now go back and tell people that India's dignity is intact, which is a great tall order right now.
Pankaj Mishra, award-winning Indian author, essayist. His new book, The World After Gaza, A History. We'll do part two and post online at democracynow.org. Happy birthday to Brendan Allen. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheh.
Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's nominating committee meeting will be held on Tuesday, February 18th at 6 p.m. This meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global independent international investigative news hour. Today is World Radio Day. We celebrate the power of radio as a vital source of news, information, and public discourse on the most pressing issues of our time. The theme this year is radio and climate. 2024 was the warmest year on record. 2025 marks an important turning point as the United States withdraws from the Paris Climate Agreement. Let us raise our radio voices to highlight the urgent climate issues facing our planet. Let us acknowledge radio's role as an enduring and invaluable form of media across the world.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a major winter storm bears down on the Portland metro area, prompting experts to plead with people to just stay home and off the roads. A local doctor's warning about carbon monoxide and frostbite as this storm will persist throughout the weekend. And as hundreds seek shelter in warming centers, a Portland city councilor explains why she wants to help lead the city on homelessness and housing issues. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, February 13th, 2025. I'm Minette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Just stay home if you can. That's the message from the Oregon Department of Transportation. I've been checking in with ODOT's Mindy McCart several times throughout the day as this winter storm's been worsening.
Oregon 78 is closed between Crane and Burns Junction. That's milepost 1 to 99 due to blowing snow. It is snowing hard with winds 40 to 50 miles per hour. We also have a closure on I-84 westbound, 3 miles west of Multnomah Falls due to a crash. In the Portland metro area, with no signs of improvement in the forecast and conditions expected to worsen throughout the day, we are urging everyone to consider staying home. In the metro area, snow is accumulating on both sides of the Interstate 5, Interstate 205 corridors. Temperatures remain below freezing, and more snow and afternoon freezing rain is expected. Crews are actively applying de-icer but multiple minor crashes have already been reported. In the Columbia River Gorge, snow and high winds are creating hazardous conditions. Further east, near the Dalles, ice is forming on Interstate 84, making travel especially dangerous. Corvallis, Albany, and Salem are still experiencing icy roads, with temperatures remaining below freezing. All mountain passes remain snow and ice covered. US 20 and OR 18 west of I-5 have significant snow and ice, while conditions east of I-5 are noticeably warmer with mostly clear roads until reaching the mountain passes. The Cascade passes, snow is falling and temperatures are in the teens and lower. Expect winter driving conditions as well as carry chains and know how to use them. From our friends to the south, the Siskiyou Pass is improving. The chain requirement did drop. Just because conditions seem fine when you leave home doesn't mean they'll stay that way. Weather can change rapidly, so be prepared. Stay safe and avoid losing control. We urge everyone to slow down. Reducing speeds at least 10 miles per hour can make a big difference in keeping you on the road. Crews are also watching for falling trees, limbs, down power lines. These further complicate our response efforts and can significantly impact our traffic. Our crews are out across the state, actively working and monitoring conditions. We've been preparing for winter weather by stockpiling up on de-icing materials, inspecting and maintaining our snow plows and equipment, and training crews to respond quickly. Crews have been working around the clock to pre-treat roads with de-icer ahead of the forecasted conditions. We are ready for this week and into the weekend, what into the weekend bring. Our crews will continue 24/7 to keep roads as safe as possible. Weather can be very unpredictable. Give yourself plenty of time to get to your destination, as you shouldn't expect the same conditions you had on your earlier drive. Bridges and overpasses are the most dangerous parts of the road in winter. They are the first to freeze and the last to thaw. Stay home if you don't need to go out. If you must go out, be prepared for changing conditions. Always check tripcheck.com before you head out. Not just about closures, but check those cameras and pay attention to the weather, or the temperatures in the area you're driving. Slow down, increase following distance. Bridges and shaded areas freeze first. Ensure your vehicle's winter ready. Tires, brakes, and wipers and lights are all in good condition. Staying visible is very important, not just for you, but for others to see your vehicle. Also, we're using variable message signs, and please follow the road message signs for important updates. We also always encourage people to consider public transit in their area if possible. Be sure you check schedules in advance. Give our workers plenty of room to work and never pass snowplows on the right. Give them that extra space. If you abandon your vehicle, it will be towed. So stay in your car if it's safe to do, as you call for assistance. Currently, the storm is impacting the Portland metro area more than it was earlier today. I don't want to overstate that staying home is the safest place. And if you don't need to go out in this weather, please stay home. Again, check tripcheck.com. Slow down and increase that following distance. They're happening so rapidly. We just are looking at the many crashes that we're having in the Portland metro area and down the Willamette Valley.
That's ODOT's Mindy McCart. I asked her for advice for people about this afternoon and evening's commute home for many who could not leave work early.
We do not see roads improving and a possibility of them getting worse as the day goes on. It does not look like we're going to have thaw. So if you are having to stay at work and you're not able to commute until later, take it slow. Actually consider possibility of leaving your vehicle at work and taking public transportation if you have that available in your area.
And more advice about staying safe and healthy during this winter storm from Multnomah County Health Officer Dr. Richard Bruno.
Those of us who are older, spend time outdoors, or take care of infants should watch out for signs of hypothermia and frostbite. Hypothermia happens when somebody's body temperature drops below 95 degrees Fahrenheit, which can be life-threatening and cause them to be confused or shiver. Frostbite causes fingers or toes to go numb and look pale, and it can happen in a matter of minutes when it's really cold.
Another major risk is carbon monoxide poisoning, which happens when people try to stay warm by burning fuel indoors without proper ventilation. Unventilated carbon monoxide gas becomes an invisible killer since it's odorless, colorless, and poisonous. Symptoms can include fatigue, headache, dizziness, nausea, confusion, bright red skin, loss of coordination, and loss of consciousness. If you suspect that anyone is suffering from hypothermia, frostbite, or carbon monoxide poisoning, call 911 immediately. For more tips and info on care for when it's cold, visit our website, multco.us/cold.
Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson has extended her emergency declaration through at least 6 p.m. tomorrow. The county is keeping six severe weather shelters open through at least noon on Friday, February 14th. Two more shelters are opening tonight. A total of 489 people came to the shelters that opened last night, demonstrating the need to save people in the houseless community. It's the number one issue our community is facing, according to many leaders, including Portland City Council District 1 Representative Candace Avalos. She is leading the city's new Committee on Homelessness and Housing, and she explains why this issue is so important to her.
When you're a 12, 13-year-old and your entire family is living in one room while you're renting out every other room in your house, including the kitchen and turning it into a room, that's the kind of experience that I'm bringing. And I say that because I think we look at housing and instability in, I think, really narrow ways at times. And we need to think, too, about overcrowding of folks, the fact that people are really, they're couch surfing, they're overcrowding houses and apartments. And those folks also need attention. So it's not just the folks who are on the streets that end up on the streets. How are we preventing all of those other folks who are really on the precipice? And I think in particular, bringing East Portland's lens to it is going to be important to me, especially because of the fact that East Portland is home to over 40% of the entire city's children, which to me speaks to the fact that many young families are trying to get by in East Portland, and with an average income of $30,000 less than every other district in East Portland, then they have much less opportunities to look for affordable housing. And how we're defining affordable housing really impacts East Portlanders, because when you're going off of a median and you're already so far behind the average of the city, there are fewer options for you. So that is some of the lens that I'm bringing into this as somebody who has been housing insecure for most of my life, and also recently became a homeowner through lots of strife. And I think just having navigated that in the last year, being able to offer some perspective too on what does it take to get people across that finish line to homeownership, and again, strengthening the sheltered housing continuum as we've been discussing. I think the finer point that I will make is it's really important to me as we are leading these discussions that we are looking to decriminalize poverty and to ensure that our unhoused community members are a part of these decisions and discussions. People who are closest to the problem are also closest to the solution. And so that is just an overall value I'm bringing. And as somebody who, over the last couple of years, I've been working with various affordable housing providers, being on different boards, talking about these issues and engaging with community members who are struggling to maintain housing, I want to make sure that the tone and tenor that we set is very inclusive. And we have to be intentional about that. And I think that's our responsibility as leaders.
And that was Portland City Council District 1 Representative Candace Avalos, the chair of the city's new Committee on Homelessness and Housing. And at the federal level, an Oregon U.S. senator led a marathon fight trying to prevent Robert F. Kennedy Jr. from becoming President Trump's new Secretary of Health and Human Services. Here is part of Democrat Ron Wyden's speech.
Late into the night, senators spoke on the Senate floor about why Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is the least qualified nominee to ever be tapped as America's chief health officer. On issue after issue, Mr. Kennedy has demonstrated a profound lack of knowledge at best and deeply dangerous views at worst. Mr. Kennedy has refused to tell Americans how he would manage healthcare issues that they're deeply worried about. Vaccine safety, women's reproductive health, drug pricing, and affordable health care, to name a few. This leaves millions of Americans alarmed about the future of health and science in America. Last week, two Oregon medical students approached me to talk about Mr. Kennedy's nomination. These medical students told me they were less concerned about the damage Mr. Kennedy would do as HHS secretary in the weeks and months to come. These medical students are not only worried about the prospect of losing cures, treatments, and medical breakthroughs if Mr. Kennedy is confirmed. These medical students from Oregon told me that his unwillingness to take science and medical data seriously is going to harm science for decades to come. So I ask my colleagues to think about those medical students' words. Is that a legacy you want to leave behind as a result of supporting Mr. Kennedy? Senate Democrats have been making this exact case. In his hearing before the Finance Committee, I asked Mr. Kennedy to square his anti-vaccine views with recent statements designed to appease a number of our senators who are quite nervous about his nomination. In his testimony, he used the fact that his own children were vaccinated to prove he was not anti-vaccine. But just a few years ago, he said he would, quote, do anything and pay anything to go back in time in order to prevent them from getting those vaccines. Mr. Kennedy stated he was not anti-vaccine, but rather pro-safety. But about 18 months ago, he said on a podcast, and I quote, no vaccine is safe and effective. We brought the evidence. We brought the receipts. And Mr. Kennedy said nothing to actually disavow his prior statements. He stuck by the time-worn tactics of a conspiracy theorist. Always ask for more evidence and never accept the evidence that's placed in front of you. Even some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle are now deeply disturbed by Mr. Kennedy's refusal to entertain evidence that would require him to change his mind on vaccine safety. Nevertheless, it sure looks like my Republican colleagues have bowed to pressure from Donald Trump to hand Mr. Kennedy the platform he has been seeking for two decades to push fringe views. I'd like to take a moment to talk about the fights ahead on health care. Republicans in the House are already pressing ahead with their plan to kick millions of Americans off of their health insurance in order to fund more tax cuts for those who are very wealthy. And as HHS Secretary, Mr. Kennedy is going to be a key player in this effort. The Senate Budget Committee debated a budget resolution that unlocks the legislative tools Republicans need to make good on their go-it-alone plan. The House Budget Committee released its own budget resolution. What is clear in both of these blueprints is that Medicaid cuts are at the top of the list. 81 million Americans rely on health care coverage under Medicaid and the CHIP program for kids. Those people are folks with disabilities, low-income families, seniors, and of course, children. The damage and destruction to American families if Republicans go through with their plans to gut Medicaid cannot be overstated. Take nursing homes, for example. 2 out of 3 nursing home residents are being covered for their health care by Medicaid. Imagine you visit your mom in her nursing home in the months after the Republican bill makes steep cuts to Medicaid. Your mom complains there are fewer and fewer staff. She had to wait more than an hour after calling for help. She tells you some of the new staff don't have time for her. You learn that the facility no longer has the resources to conduct background checks and that they're desperate for workers. A few weeks later, the facility manager pulls you aside to deliver some bad news. Her nursing home can no longer accept patients with Medicaid after steep federal cuts to the program. Unless you can find another facility that accepts Medicaid, you've got to pay the high monthly costs out of your own pocket. Either you scramble to find the money to cover a new facility that costs thousands of dollars a month, or you bring your mom home with you. So between holding down a full-time job and raising young kids, suddenly you have to deal with making sure that your mom gets full-time care, and that requires nursing assistance around the clock. Many of your friends and neighbors with aging parents and grandparents in nursing homes are facing the catastrophe that I've just described. Now, Republicans are going to do somersaults to disguise their cuts to Medicaid. Every single child, senior, or family struggling to pay the bills that gets denied coverage is a win. And that brings us to Mr. Kennedy. During his confirmation hearing on everything from abortion to vaccines to Medicare and Medicaid, Mr. Kennedy was given ample opportunity to go on the record about how he would improve these programs, bring down costs, save taxpayers money, and improve care. He showed a complete lack of understanding of the basics of Medicaid and how it functions. I personally believe it shouldn't be too much to ask for the future CEO of Medicaid to understand how important it is to provide affordable coverage for millions of families. Republicans, with Donald Trump at the helm, are steering our country toward a health care cliff. Their ultimate objective is to take away Medicaid from as many people as they can. What the American people need is a leader who will be the voice of reason in the room as Trump and his assistants in Congress start slicing and cutting. Our country needs a leader at Health and Human Services who's actually going to work to improve care and lower costs, defend the reproductive freedoms of families, and listen to facts and science. The American people have no reason to believe Mr. Kennedy will be that leader. There is no question the healthcare system in America needs reforms. It's falling short, and Democrats want to work in a bipartisan way on those issues. We are disillusioned by a system that puts profits over patients in too many circumstances. Nobody on this side of the aisle is arguing for the status quo. But the solution does not lie in Donald Trump's, quote, concept of a plan to make our country less healthy, less safe, and less successful. When kids are kicked off their Medicaid coverage and forced to go without basic medical care and grow up with chronic illnesses that leave them in a lifetime of pain and suffering, Republicans are going to regret any vote they give to Robert Kennedy.
Senate Democrats unanimously opposed Kennedy. Despite the efforts of Senator Wyden and many others, only one Republican, Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, joined them in voting against Kennedy. By a vote of 52-48, they confirmed Kennedy to lead the department of about 100,000 employees that runs 13 agencies. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, a winter storm warning remains in effect until 10 Friday morning. We'll see a mix of wintry precipitation this evening, snow overnight down to 28. Friday, it'll be mainly cloudy with snow showers in the morning, a high of 42. Today in history, on this date in 1633, Galileo arrived in Rome to face charges of heresy for believing that the earth revolves around the sun. Galileo faced the Roman Inquisition in April of that year and agreed to plead guilty in exchange for a sentence of house arrest. Our quote of the day is from Galileo: "Mathematics is the language with which God has written the universe." A rally on Capitol Hill this week brought out a large crowd of federal union workers and members of Congress, including one from Oregon, who support them. Many in very direct and even vulgar terms expressing how they felt about President Trump and Elon Musk deciding to cut the federal workforce.
We fought with him for 10 years. I can tell you, you can't make ugly pretty. And I'll tell you, I'm from Jersey, so I look a little differently. I say, F- Trump!
Shortly after that, at the rally to save the civil service on Capitol Hill, Congresswoman and Dr. Maxine Dexter took her turn at the mic.
I don't swear in public very well, but we have to F- Trump! Please don't tell my children that I just did that!
Dexter told the crowd she's from a union family and supports their cause, and spoke about the first legislation she's introduced as a new member of Congress.
The Stop Musk Act, which is my first bill. I introduced it last week because we have to protect federal employees from retaliation for preventing, resisting, and circumventing Elon Musk's unlawful actions. So I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to stand with my union brothers and sisters every step of the way.
All right.
We're going to fight for public servants, and we're going to get the majority in 26. Thank you all.
And again, that was Oregon Congresswoman Maxine Dexter. Also speaking out this week was Washington U.S. Senator Patty Murray.
We have a lifting deadline fast approaching, and we need a top line very soon to be able to write and pass our bills. I remain at the table with my Democratic counterpart in the House to get a result so we can move forward. But it is extremely difficult to land an agreement on top lines, much less our annual bills, when you have a president and an unelected billionaire ignoring the very agreements we pass each year in our spending bills. What we are seeing now, the absolute lawlessness, the illegal funding freeze that is risking jobs and hurting working people, that simply cannot continue. The president is illegally blocking hundreds of billions in approved funding for our roads and bridges, for clean energy jobs, foreign assistance, and a lot more. What's more, the problem right now is that it's not even March 14th yet, and Trump and Elon Musk are effectively shutting down the government now. Whatever parts they don't like, all on their own, without any regard for the law or the Constitution or Congress. No one voted for the president to illegally block funding from Head Start classrooms or our rural health centers. But that is what Trump did in his second week in office. No one voted to let an unelected billionaire decide what bills the federal government would or would not pay. But Trump is giving Elon the keys to the Treasury. In case Elon needs a reminder, the power of the purse sits with Congress. And that means when people vote for us, we are their voice in how their tax dollars get spent. The Constitution does not say Elon gets to decide if our elementary schools and hospitals get funding. Congress negotiates how we invest in our communities. So this has got to change, and we need our Republican colleagues to work with us to make sure it does. And I hope that we can resolve things in time to pass the full-year funding bills that I actually wanted to finish last December. Now, as we consider nominations on the floor this week, I want to just remind all of you, it was only 2019 when I co-led a bipartisan Senate Health Committee hearing with Senator Alexander to educate people on vaccines, with nearly every Republican senator on that dais making very clear that vaccines are safe, they are effective, and they are life-saving. Now Donald Trump and Elon Musk's Republican Party is confirming as our nation's highest health official, RFK Jr., a man who has spent years crusading against vaccines. Republicans are choosing to pretend it like it is in any way believable that RFK Jr. won't use his new power to do exactly the thing he's been trying to do for decades, undermine our vaccines. People are alarmed. My phones are ringing off the hook with constituents who understand the stakes here and want us to stand for science and for their health and safety. Because the health secretary has real power over whether Americans can get the basic information and care they need. I think most of my colleagues know what is at stake here. They know what sort of agenda RFK Jr. will pursue, and they know what sort of damage he could do. There are political realities, we all get that, but there's also right and wrong. And there's also fact and fiction. There's also people staying healthy and people dying pointlessly, kids dying pointlessly from diseases that we can prevent.
And that was Washington U.S. Senator Patty Murray. Nearly half of Americans have no savings for their golden years. Mike Mohn reports on efforts to address what's called a retirement crisis.
Pensions offered to public employees are seen as more stable because they're not shaken by movements in the financial markets. In recent polling from the National Institute on Retirement Security, 86% of Americans say all workers, including the private sector, should have a retirement plan that is more pension-driven. The group's Dan Doonan says retirement coverage is still too spotty for non-wealthy workers, leaving them on their own to put away savings.
In general, we're just asking way too much of individuals to get all this right.
He says the good news is that more states are setting up programs that enroll private sector workers in an IRA-style plan. The goal is to step in when a company can't or won't offer retirement perks. I'm Mike Mohn.
The possible weakening of environmental laws and standards could harm many Americans. That's one of the stories in today's edition of 2025 Talks.
These facilities pose a huge risk to the communities that will have to live with them because their products and the byproducts are extremely toxic and cancerous.
Vicky Abughalioum with the Buckeye Environmental Network warns that stripping out federal clean air and water rules could lead to a surge in plastic incineration. Unlike oil and gas projects, these incinerators can be built wherever there is plastic waste, but burning plastic can produce multiple dangerous toxins. Along with other agencies, EPA has announced that most staff will return to in-person work 5 days a week, which the new administration says will push personnel to quit. And the Department of Government Efficiency, led by billionaire Elon Musk, has gained access to the EPA's acquisition system, controlling millions in spending. In line with White House moves on diversity programs, the new administration looks likely to dismantle the EPA's Office of Environmental Justice, putting the staff on leave. Adrian Hollis with the National Wildlife Federation says the office was created by President George H.W. Bush to protect minority and low-income communities. She says eliminating it will hit vulnerable communities hardest.
The Office of Environmental Justice and Civil Rights focuses on issues that affect communities and groups of people that are disproportionately impacted by environmental issues or disproportionately impacted when rules and regulations are not followed.
Federal judges have blocked several key administration policies on government reform and immigration. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt called these rulings a continuation of the weaponization of justice against President Donald Trump. Advocates warn that national monuments in western states, including Bears Ears, Devil's Tower, and Grand Staircase Escalante, are at risk from expanding energy production. Daniel Hart with the National Parks Conservation Association says Americans have repeatedly spoken out in defense of them.
They support the outdoor recreation economy, especially in rural states. Those communities nearby are heavily supported by the people who come in and out of these national monuments.
On Capitol Hill, the Senate has confirmed former Democratic Representative Tulsi Gabbard as Director of National Intelligence, a major win for President Trump. Gabbard's nomination sparked controversy over her past positions on Ukraine and government surveillance, and her 2017 meeting with former Syrian President